Oh, okay. Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. Well, the new Pope gave his first homily this morning. And I'm aware that there are thoughts and discussions going on that since the Fatima prophecies indicate that subsequent to them, there would only be two more popes, maybe, possibly, do you think that Pope Benedict may just be the reappearing of the Christ? Might he have more significance than otherwise might be expected? Well, my only response to that is, you're here, aren't you? You are the Christ, and you're here, you have come. Is that not what we've been talking about for months? You see, it's very easy to slip back into old habits. Looking out there, waiting for Him to come. Waiting for the one who has the answers. Well, that one is each of you. Let me ask this. If Pope Benedict was the second coming, or if Maitreya was the second coming, or if any other individuality was the second coming, do you think that he would walk in and say, your problems are solved? Do you think that you all would suddenly be swept up in illumination? Well, how honest are you all willing to be? How many of you really want to be swept up into illumination? How many of you want to let go of your cherished concepts? How many of you would want to find yourself having a different experience of yourself? In other words, how many of you would really be willing to change? You would sort of be put on the spot, all of you. Oh my God, it's time. The time has come. I have to wake up now. No more dilly-dallying. And then, in the back of your mind, you rapidly think about where you put those boots with the real sturdy spiked heels that you will be able to use to dig in as you're pulled forward faster than you want to be pulled. Many of you would say, this is not fair, is I'm not supposed to be forced to wake up. Maybe it's my birthright, but nobody has the right to force me to do it when they say to do it. Stop waiting. Stop waiting for someone else. Stop waiting for me to come out there. I'm already coming in the quiet of your very own minds. I'm already here to help you show up as who you are and stop pretending that you aren't and stop believing that you aren't and stop acting like you aren't. You're here. The Christ has come. You're here. You exist. You are conscious now on this planet, on this day, in this moment of conscious awareness. And in this moment of conscious awareness is just as good as any other moment of conscious awareness to stop the farce, to stop pretending that you aren't what you are, and that somebody else will be it for you. Pope Benedict is the Christ, just like you are the Christ. How much of it he will be willing to embody remains to be seen, just as how much of it you are willing to embody remains to be seen. So tempt yourself. And don't delay on attending to yourself because you're waiting for so-and-so to appear or to see if so-and-so will be the Christ, if so-and-so will step up to the plate, you see. It's just a distraction. It's all a distraction from your finding yourself in a place of delightful discovery of what you are. The delightful discovery of going up the stairs without moving your feet, 3 inches off the ground, all the way up. It's discovering that you have the capacity to look at what your old habits of perception would have determined to be ungodlike and seeing God there and having the pleasure of seeing God there and not being fooled anymore into believing that it's something else and in suffering from your belief. It's a pleasant experience. It's an experience of discovery. So I just wanted to take a moment to get everybody back on track. Let Pope Benedict be the Christ. Let Joe Blow down the street be the Christ. And you bring your attention more significantly within you, paying attention to your capacity to be what you already divinely are, with enough curiosity to let more of what you divinely are into your frame of reference. This is a course in sudden shifts of perception. Well, hey, you can all be very happy if Pope Benedict has sudden shifts of perception, but until you have yours, so what? You're not having your joy. And not having your joy means that you will not be experiencing the fulfillment of being. Remember, verb, the fulfillment of being that it's yours to be. And that's what I want for you, and that's what you want for yourselves. Don't delay it by waiting for someone else to do it. Okay, let's go to the book. The inclusiveness of creation. Nothing beyond yourself can make you fearful or loving, because nothing is beyond you. Now let's go back to the first three words and get the emphasis in the right place. The wrong place is nothing beyond you, beyond you. Nothing out there, nothing beyond you can make you fearful or loving. And here's the correct emphasis. Nothing beyond yourself can make you fearful or loving, because nothing is beyond you. This is important because you always determine for yourself whether an experience is a fearful or a loving one, whether an experience is one that should cause you fear or inspire love in you. It is not the experience that determines it, it's the definitions you give. Nothing beyond yourself can make you fearful or loving, because nothing is beyond you. You are a singularity. You are the presence of mind that is mind being consciousness. Nothing is going on outside of that, because there is no outside to it. Continuing, time and eternity are both in where? Your minds, and will conflict until you perceive time solely as a means to regain eternity. Time isn't out there. Eternity isn't out there. Consciousness is infinite and all. It is therefore ever present, omnipresent, and omnipresence is eternity. Now, another way of saying this is, instead of time and eternity are both in your minds, illusion and truth are both in your minds and will conflict until you perceive time, an illusion, solely as a means to regain eternity, what is real. You cannot do this as long as you believe that anything which happens to you is caused by factors outside yourself. See, this is why it's so important to consciously embrace a shift of perception instead of just waiting for it to come. You can consciously embrace identifying yourself as a physical body, a tiny thing in the middle of a huge universe. Or you can identify yourself with the conscious awareness that you are, in which all experiences are going on. You see? You're all easily overwhelmed by the infinity of creation, the diversity of it, the incredible beauty, no matter how close you up you get or how far back you stand. you all get overwhelmed with all of this stuff, all of this conscious experience. And you don't let it register with you that all of it is going on in your mind. Or better put, all of it is going on in mind, in the conscious experience of being. You're not a small object in the middle of billions, trillions, gazillions of other objects, infinitely. You're the overlooked, ignored mind in which all of these experiences are going on. You are the boundaryless mind. This very conscious awareness that you're experiencing as you listen to me speak and hear the sound of Paul's voice and see the things in the room. Continuing, you must learn that time is solely at your disposal, and that nothing in the world can take this responsibility from you. Well, what responsibility? The responsibility to use time to regain eternity. You can use the time you seem to have to waste time, or you can use the time to wake up. You can use time to stay in the illusion a little bit longer, or you can use time by means of giving your attention to those things that will promote your awakening. You see, you can exist in fear of what will happen. You can exist in fear of what your government is going to do, or another government is going to do, or what an axis of evil is going to do, or a certain race of people is going to do, or whether or not a meteor is going to come and destroy the whole earth. You can exist in a myriad of thoughts. You can exist in a practice of placing your attention on things that will not promote a sudden shift of perception, you see? Or you can spend your time giving your attention to those things which will promote a sudden shift of perception. You can give your attention to being a tiny, minuscule little thing in the middle of an unpredictable universe. Or you can give your attention to the idea that you are the conscious awareness in which all conscious experiences are occurring. And you don't have to imagine being conscious awareness, because you know right at this moment you are conscious and you're experiencing being conscious. That's not some radical ethereal idea. You are right now conscious. You say, I'm alive. But that means I'm conscious of being. I'm having conscious experiences. You have, you say, a mind. And I'm saying, mind, that mind is what you are. And that mind is boundaryless. Right now, these ideas promote sudden shifts of perception. You must learn that time is solely at your disposal, and that nothing in the world can take this responsibility from you, and I'm adding, of using that time constructively for the purpose of nurturing sudden shifts of perception that will constitute waking up. Continuing, you can violate God's laws in your imagination. Only place you can violate God's laws. In your imagination. But you cannot escape them. What are God's laws? Well, you might say, well, thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. It's a lot of no-nos, isn't it? But God's laws are that love prevails. Love is the law. The being of love is your function. The capacity to be what you are is inherent in you and can never be taken away. And what you are, as what I am being right there where you are, is all there is of you, and it's everything. And it's all-inclusive. And not a single brother or sister or leaf or ant or planet or solar system is left out of it. Nor is your brother's mind left out of it. You are all joined, totally and completely. Now, these are God's laws, because these are what the truth is. The truth, let's say the unchangeableness of truth, is God's law. You see? You can violate God's laws in your imagination, but you cannot escape from them. In other words, the truth about you remains the truth about you no matter what you imagine. That's not complicated, is it? They were established for your protection and are as inviolate as your safety. God created nothing beside you, and nothing beside you exists, for you are part of Him. What except Him can exist? Nothing beyond Him, God, can happen, because nothing except Him is real. When it says God created nothing beside you, it means God created nothing unlike you. God is a singularity, and all of creation reflects that singularity. All of creation is that singularity rendered experienceable. Nothing beyond Him can happen because nothing except Him is real. Your creations add to Him as you do, but nothing is added that is different because everything has always been. What can upset you except the ephemeral? Everybody know what ephemeral means? Something that's short-lived. Something temporary. What can upset you? What can upset you except the ephemeral? And how can the ephemeral be real if you are God's only creation and He created you eternal? Meaning not temporary, not short-lived. You see, that which is temporal has to be an illusion. Anything you see that seems to come and go, is a misperception of an eternally divine idea in the mind of God. What can upset you except that which isn't real, believing that it's real? What can upset you except the ephemeral? And how can the ephemeral be real if you are God's only creation and He created you eternal? Your holy will establishes everything that happens to you. Every response you make to everything you perceive is up to you, because your will, what? Determines your perception of it. And you understand this. There's the old idea expressed that somebody gives you a bunch of lemons. What do? Complain about it or make lemonade? All depends on where you're standing and what your attitude is. You can either see it as a problem or an opportunity. Every response you make to everything you perceive is up to you, because your will determines your perception of it. Again, your holy will establishes everything that happens to you. Does it establish that you get a bunch of lemons? No. But you know what? As I mentioned last week, you are the Christ. You are going through your days employing capacities that are absolutely divine to have an experience that is either limited or unlimited. But at all times, you are the totality, the ultimate of what God has created right there where you are. So, your holy will establishes everything that happens to you. And if you use your holy will to insist that you are tiny, a little tiny hunk of flesh, born of woman, and a few days and full of trouble, that will be your experience. Because your holy will determines how you're going to experience anything. You can use it well or you can use it poorly, but it doesn't change the fact that that which is using it is ultimate. The Christ, the presence of God. Every response you make to everything you perceive is up to you, because your will determines your perception of it. Now, you don't have two kinds of will. You don't have a human will and a divine will. You have a divine will which you're using well or poorly. That's all there is to it. Become clear about this so that you can take responsibility for your experiences. Or so that you can take responsibility, better responsibility, for how you're using your divine mind. Because as you begin to use it well, you will have fewer and fewer distressing experiences. Or conversely, poor behavior on the part of others will distress you less and less, because you're in a balanced frame of mind which because it is undisturbed, constitutes the presence of mind that knows how to be appropriate under the circumstances, and as a result, be able to be an agent for change, for correction. Continuing, God does not change his mind about you, for he is not uncertain of himself. And what he knows can be known, because he does not know it only, he does not know only for himself. Now, why would it talk about God not changing his mind? Because you change your minds all the time. And God is your measuring stick. God is the actual measuring stick of who and what you are. So it's helpful to know that God does not change his mind about you. For he is not uncertain of himself. That means that if you find yourself changing your mind frequently, you may know that you are not using your mind well. If your brother is the Christ, there's nothing other than that to think about him. There's nothing other than that to look for in him. There's nothing other than that, and I'm going to say this very carefully, there's nothing other than that to hold him to. There's nothing other than that to reflect back to him, even if he's behaving in a totally inconsistent way. You've got to find a way not to have to change your mind anymore. Because God didn't give you that capacity, not having it himself. And he couldn't embody anything unlike himself in the extension of himself called you. God does not change his mind about you, for he is not uncertain of himself. And what he knows can be known, because he does not know only for himself. What does that mean? It means that when you look at your brother and you see something distressing there, you say, wow, he's not very clear. Or wow, he's really in a bad space. Or wow, he's really a bad person. Or wow, he is a very dishonest person. I must be careful about him. Well, as you go through these thoughts and feelings and build up a case against your brother, you are absolutely disallowing yourself from seeing what God is being right there. You're saying that what God is being right there is not available to be known, because you, knowing what he's really like, have to keep yourself in a state of defense so as not to be overwhelmed by or abused by your brother. Now, the only reason you would come to the conclusion that the use of your attention must be put to defending yourself against your brother is because you don't think that what God is being right there is there to be experienced or known. Because if you thought that it was, you really would get busy giving your attention to recognizing it. But it says here, what he, God, knows can be known, because he does not know only for himself. His knowing is the only conscious awareness, true conscious awareness of anything that you can have. Anything else is something you made up with your imagination. So, you know, when you get up each day and when you look at the world, you need to remember that what God knows, and everything you see is the result of His knowing, the effect, the image and likeness, the manifestation of His knowing, whatever God knows is available and can be known right now, right here, by you. Because He does not know only for Himself. His knowing is what you will find yourself experiencing when you are in your right mind, which is what? The Holy Spirit. It is nothing less than your right mind. He, continuing, God, created you for Himself, but He gave you the power to create for yourself so you could be like Him. That is why your will is holy. And remember, it is your will, your holy will, that you use either immaculately well or poorly. And as a result, you determine for yourself what you will experience. That means that you will determine for yourself whether you're going to experience the kingdom of heaven or reality as what it is or what you've made it up to be. That's all. He created you for Himself, but He gave you the power to create for yourself, so you could be like Him. That is why your will is holy. Can anything exceed the love of God? Can anything then exceed your will? Nothing can reach you from beyond it, because being in God, in other words, inseparable from God, you encompass everything. You, as mind, encompass everything. Everything is being experienced in the singularity that is conscious awareness. You are experiencing the ultimate at every moment, even in what you call this lifetime. Well, you see, you're not in a lifetime, you're in mind, you could say. You are, for lack of better words, in the conscious awareness that is conscious of a world. And in actuality, you're not in that mind, you are that mind. That presence of mind is the constituting presence of you. It's what you are. Nothing can reach you from beyond it, meaning your will. Because being in God, you encompass everything. Believe this, and you will realize how much is up to you. Oh, that can sound like a humongous burden, responsibility. you will realize how much is up to you. It's like, well, everything is up to me. But you know what? If it's up to you, then it isn't up to anybody else. You immediately become free of the of others' assertion of human will over you that you think you have to defend yourself against. And suddenly life has become utterly simple. There's no battle. You encompass everything. Believe this, and you will realize how much is up to you. It's like the relieving answer is, it's all up to you. It's not up to anybody else at all. And so I'm free in the quietness of the presence of mind that I am to come to clarity. That's the only determining factor. And so, instead of being a struggle with everyone and the laws of the community and the laws of the land, whether they seem to be just or unjust, all it amounts to is you being able, without all the distraction, to give your attention by your will, by your choice, to that which will promote sudden shifts of perception, miracles, the markers of awakening. Suddenly, everything has become simpler. Not more difficult. Continuing, when anything threatens your peace of mind, ask yourself, has God changed his mind about me? Then accept his decision, for it is indeed changeless. And, here's where you do your part, refuse to change your mind about yourself. Well, some of you might say, well, I don't change my mind about myself. I'm very consistent. I am very dependable. Everyone knows me. Everyone knows they can depend upon me to be who I am. But what you have to remember is that if this definition of who you are, that's so dependable and everybody can count on, wasn't arrived at through union with the Holy Spirit, then you've already changed your mind about yourself. If you constantly go around and you say, either I'm very competent and I do everything well, or you say, I really am not very competent and I'm always doing things wrong and there's no hope for me, but I am dependably incompetent. Either way, you've made a definition of yourself. What you're saying hasn't arisen out of a direct experience of the place of excellence in you that is the presence of God, that you're able to recognize as the presence of God. And so, you've already changed your mind about yourself from what God knows about you. You see what I'm saying? Accept his decision, for it is indeed changeless, and refuse to change your mind about yourself. God will never decide against you, or he would be deciding against himself. The reason you do not know your creations is simply that you would decide against them as long as your minds are split. And to attack what you have created is impossible. But remember that it is as impossible for God. What does that mean? The reason you do not know your creations is simply that you would decide against them as long as your minds are split. Well, what are your creations? A design you made? An object you molded? No. Your creations are movements of love. I'm going to put it that way. Actions that have arisen out of a genuine connection with love in you. Creation is the movement of truth that you have allowed through. Actions that express truth that you know. Creations literally are whatever proceed from a connectedness with the infinite, a connectedness with the divine, no matter how limited the connection may have been or how unlimited it may have been. Paul is in the act of creation right now. He, because he loves, and I will put it this way so it might be a little clearer, because as a human being, whatever his definition of a human being is, because he loves, he hesitates to act and listens and makes the connection with the Holy Spirit, makes the connection with me. And what happens is that which blesses not just those of you who are hearing and experiencing what is happening, but the whole brotherhood, infinitely speaking, all of creation is blessed by it. Now, all of you, in the process of awakening, must come to a point where you don't depend upon Paul being the presence of love that constitutes the movement of creation. Each one of you must arrive at a point of doing exactly what Paul is doing. Going within, leaning into the place of excellence in you, and beginning to depend upon what emerges instead of leaving the responsibility up to Paul and saying, well, whatever Raj says through Paul, that's what I'm going to depend upon. The element of trust must be brought into play as you lean into the Holy Spirit, that which is nothing more than your right mind. And then you must be willing to dare to act upon your knowing what comes from the Holy Spirit. Well, you know, there are many who are so happy that Paul does this because it means they don't have to do it yet. Because they don't know if they could do what Paul has to do, what they see as Paul having to do, which is not live quite the same as everyone else does. And who would be there, who would be willing to publicly acknowledge that they practice listening to the Christ and give voice to what they hear without apology and without guilt and without self-consciousness? Well, you know, I wouldn't mind listening to guidance if I didn't have to tell anybody about it. It's like saying, I wouldn't mind being gay if nobody had to know. You see. The reason you do not know your creations is simply that you would decide against them, you see. You would want to keep them quiet. You would want to keep them undercover as long as your minds are split. And to attack what you have created is impossible. So, you see, what you would attack of your creations that you cannot in actuality attack simply cannot register with you. It's one of God's laws, meaning it's just the way it works. Even with your wonderful, holy will, you cannot do what you cannot do. And since you, as long as your minds are split, would attack your real creations are unavailable to you. You cannot be conscious of them. It keeps them safe, and it keeps you safe. Until you're willing to abandon the split mind. Continuing, the law of creation is that you love your creations as yourself because they are part of you. Everything that was created is therefore perfectly safe because the laws of God protect it by His love. So, again, if you're, through the use of your holy will, practicing a split mind, your creation simply won't be available to you consciously for you to attack. And therefore, they are therefore perfectly safe. Because the laws of God protect them by His love. Any part of your mind that does not know this has banished itself from knowledge because it has not met its conditions, the conditions of knowledge. You cannot know singularity in a singular fashion when your mind is conflicted, and therefore, until you abandon your fascination with conflict, you won't see or experience singularity as it really is. It's that simple. Continuing, who could have done this but you? Well, is that a guilt trip? No. It's once again what will relieve you. If you alone could have done this, it means nobody else did it. And it means you're therefore not at the mercy of anyone else, and you're not in a position of having to conflict with others to overcome them to free yourself. No one else had anything to do with it, and therefore you are completely free to just change your mind. Who could have done this but you? Recognize this gladly, for in this recognition lies the realization that your banishment is not of God and therefore does not exist. You see? You didn't fall. You weren't part of the great fall. No great fall ever happened. You were and are and always will be only what you are, which is only what God is being right there where you are, right now. You, continuing, are, you are, neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing toward it. The book says, you are at home in God, dreaming of exile, but perfectly capable of awakening to reality. If you're dreaming that you're in exile, then there's no self-improvement process you have to go through, is there, to wake up? It's just a dream of being in exile. And are you in the dream because God punished you? No. You're in a dream because you chose to have a fantasy. That's all. And there's no process to waking up to the ultimate of what you are. There's just a choice to be made to stop insisting that you are what you think you are. And having ongoing curiosity to see the more of what you are that's present right here. You are at home in God, dreaming of exile, but perfectly capable of awakening to reality. Is it your will to do so? To awake to reality? Not yet. Well, no biggie, you know. You are perfectly free to will to not know what you are, and to will to engage in a conflicted, polarized frame of mind which colors the kingdom of heaven for you so that you behave in ways that are inconsistent with the kingdom of heaven. You're perfectly able to, you're perfectly allowed to, but it hasn't and doesn't make it, it hasn't made it real and doesn't make it real. Continuing, you know from your own experience that what you see in dreams you think is real, as long as you are asleep. Yet the instant you waken, you know that everything that seemed to happen did not happen at all. You do not think this mysterious, even though all the laws of what you awakened to were violated while you slept. Is it not possible that you merely shifted from one dream to another without really awakening? You fall asleep at night and you have a dream. And you wake up and you say, I'm awake. But now you're learning that what you call being awake is still a state of misperception. That's very helpful, because your experience with night dreams helps you have an experiential perspective that allows you then to look at your experience right now while you say you're awake and say, maybe my way of perceiving is still altered, is still not consistent with what's real. When you have the dream, when you get up in the morning, are you guilty of the dreams you had? No. And when you wake up, in terms of coming back into your right mind, the way you've been experiencing the kingdom of heaven right now, you will find will be no cause for guilt at all either. So you don't need to be afraid of sudden shifts of perception, because they won't render you judgeable, and they won't set you in line to the great courthouse in the sky, waiting for your case to come up to be heard, and where judgment will occur, and then you will know whether you go to hell or heaven. You see? So let your curiosity arise, and let your curiosity be genuine, not tentative. You are the Christ. And you can use your holy will on your behalf instead of to your detriment. And you can use it in many ways, that is, to your betterment. One of which is what we discussed last week when you go up and down the stairs. To do it with a light step, to realize that you are using ultimate capacities to move from one place to another in a very limited way. And you want to experience those capacities in a less limited way, so that you either levitate effortlessly up the stairs or you teleport instantaneously up the stairs. Don't engage curiosity in a heavy, laborious, studious way. Let there be lightness to it. Let there be fun to it. Continuing, would you bother to reconcile what happened in conflicting dreams? And here it's referring to the night dream and the daydream that you're all having an experience of, because you're not seeing your day through the eyes of God, which God gave you to see through. Would you bother to reconcile what happened in conflicting dreams? You know, you could say, what's wrong with me? How could I be so confused that I have two unreal dreams? I must really be messed up. And you could go on and then you could begin to develop theories and teachings and steps to be taken to learn how to separate this dream from the other dream. And thus prepare yourself for deserving to see everything clearly. Would you bother to reconcile or do anything at all about what happened in conflicting dreams? Or would you dismiss both together if you discovered that reality is in accord with neither? You do not remember being awake. When you hear the Holy Spirit, you merely feel better because loving seems possible to you. But you do not remember yet that it once was so. And it is in this remembering, and we could say it is in this dim remembering, that you will know it can be so again. And I will add, and your faith will be increased, and you will unleash your curiosity a little bit further and become more undefended, and thus provide the environment in which a miracle can occur, a sudden shift of perception. Continuing, what is possible, meaning waking up totally, or experiencing that loving is possible, has not yet been accomplished. Yet, what has once been is so now, if it is eternal. And you know what? No matter how convoluted the concepts are that you might have created to cause you to misperceive things, you cannot have made anything out of yourself that is less than or different from the presence of God being you. And there is no way you could have arrived in a place or a state of existence that no longer includes and embodies what you ultimately are. It's just absolutely impossible. And that is why I keep repeating this, that you are neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing toward it. You are at that point and must understand yourself therefrom. Continuing, when you remember, you will know what you remember is eternal, and therefore is now. You will remember everything the instant you desire it wholly. For if to desire wholly is to create, you will have willed away the separation, returning your mind simultaneously to your Creator and your creations. Knowing them, you will have no wish to sleep, but only the will to waken and be glad. Dreams will be impossible, because you will want only truth. And being at last your will, it will be yours. You see, you're not going, it is not going to be possible. It will be impossible for you to arrive at the experience of singularity, which means no conflict, no polarities, no tension. It will be impossible for you to arrive at an experience of singularity while you're still trying to be a definition, trying to reach the experience of singularity. As long as you think you are a conflicted being, trying to become worthy of experiencing the singularity, you will not be able to arrive at the conscious experience of it. You have to stop thinking of yourself. You have to stop conceiving of yourself as a conflicted mortal, a conflicted hunk of flesh, a vulnerable, outcome of physical processes. You're going to have to abandon the idea of smallness, physicalness, and vulnerability. You are going to have to start understanding yourself from the ultimate right here. And you can do it. And it will be easier for you to do it because someone has shared with you that that's the answer. It's not an answer that is on the front page of the news every night. It's not an answer that's printed in the flyleaf of every book that's published, just to remind you of something utterly essential to coming back into your right mind. But someone's telling you. Pissant mortals never get into the kingdom of heaven. Why? Because there ain't no such critter. But the divine one that you are can recover or rediscover the kingdom of heaven because of what you divinely are and because what God knows, God does not know only for himself, but constitutes your inherent, eternal, ever-present knowing. We could say your capacity to know. And we only would say your capacity to know because at the moment you don't seem to be experiencing it. But your mind is not incapacitated. The capacity is present. The capacity is functional. And all you have to do is stop willing not to know it because you prefer to will to know something that's pure imagination and believe that it is true. And all I'm ever doing is promoting your withdrawal of your confidence in your imagination and saying, hey, hey everybody over here, there's something real going on and it's here for you to see and you have the capacity to see it. All you have to do is want to see it instead of wanting to see what you're presently seeing. And you've got to be willing to stop willing to believe what you see just because your parents and all of the teachers you ever had taught you what the truth was. And all of the books you read as far back into ancient history as you can go tell you this. And so it must be true. I'm sorry, it's not. But you have to will to abandon your confidence in anything that has arisen out of imagination. And then you have to will to be genuinely curious. Well, curiosity can be dangerous, you know, because you have to abandon your securities. You have to be willing to be vulnerable to the unexpected. Well, not being willing to do that and not willing to do it will just give you more of what you already have. If you like it, you like it. But you don't have to. It's okay not to. And not willing to be committed to misperception. At the least, causes you to be subject to spontaneous revelation. Not a bad result from a little bit of neglect. With that, I will leave you for tonight. I will be with you every moment, though. And I trust that you will approach the coming week with curiosity and less defendedness and a little bit more anticipation of joy in this process. I love you. 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 And the fellow behind the console, I love you. And I love you. And I love you. Love really is possible.